Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, June 3rd, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, co-host of the Politics of Everything, contributing editor at the New Republic, and proprietor of the AP, the good one, Alex Perrine, will be joining us. Also, later in the program, 75% chance, health allowing, Sarah Silverman will be joining us, maybe by phone, maybe by video. Talk about her new show, or the off-Broadway musical, The Bedwetter.
I read that book.
Emma's very excited.
I'm a big fan.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden calls on Congress to pass gun legislation. Good luck. Economy adds 390,000 jobs in May. That's a very, very good number. New York State lawmakers pass new gun reform laws, tightening some of the most stringent gun laws in the nation. And this, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who have been watching the show or listening to the show for years, you will know, is of particular interest to me. The new Social Security trustee report is out. The Social Security Trust Fund gains one more year of solvency until 2034. Medicare solvency jumps 2 years. Have more on that in just a moment. Meanwhile, OPEC decides to increase production. Oh, and Joe Biden to travel to Saudi Arabia, the former pariahs, because of their leader calling for the assassination of a journalist, highlighting again why we should be off fossil fuels. House Oversight Committee investigating whether Jared Kushner used his position in the Trump administration to enrich himself. Spoiler alert! Probably did. Florida announces the end of Medicaid coverage for all transgender people, including adults. Pennsylvania Republican governor nominee questioned over his participation in the January 6th assault on the Capitol. He was there. COVID shots could be available for kids under the age of 5 in 3 weeks. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It is Casual Friday, of course, here, as she has been all week, Emma Vigeland.
Yes, hello.
Not just this week, but others. There's a lot of mixed emotions on your part today, isn't there, Emma?
You're just gonna out me like that?
I mean, both. You're so I've never seen you so excited about anything. You're blushing.
Well, wait until she calls.
She may not.
On my second day here, she called into the show, and we didn't have the rapport yet for me to tell you that inside I was very nervous. But I was just such, I was growing up, I was a huge fan. I must have watched Jesus's Magic, her stand-up special, 20 times.
Save this for her. She's very excited.
But I don't know if that'll come off cool if I talk about
that. No, you won't. But Sarah's not that cool herself, to be honest with you. But
well.
I mean, her work is cool, but she is a person, total nerd. The Bedwetter, I saw it last night, and it's an off-Broadway play of or musical of her memoir, and I thought it was great. I thought it was great, and if I didn't think it was great, she wouldn't come on today. So it would be awkward. It would be really awkward if I didn't think it was good. IAMR, please take my call today, 541 area code. I want to talk about AR-15s. Can't promise you we're going to get the calls. We might, but I can't promise you. We will work on that. Meantime, last night, Joe Biden addressed the country over guns. I feel like this has happened before with Obama did the same thing. And it didn't seem to have much of an impact. But it is, look, this is important to do. Because while I don't think it's going to have much of an impact in terms of moving the legislature, it may have an impact in terms of the way people vote, which will ultimately have an impact in moving the legislature. I don't know that even if it moves the legislature, it's going to have a major impact on the actual laws in this country because of the Supreme Court. But that needs to be brought out, too. The next 15, 20 years are going to be about, forget 15, 20 years, the next 2 to 10 years are going to be about the American public understanding the role the Supreme Court plays in our daily lives. And the only way you get there is if you get the lawmakers to pass laws that get struck down. And the only way you get there is if you get lawmakers in who are going to pass these laws. I mean, so that's the way it works. So as easy as it is to dismiss this as just simply, I don't know, something to keep Biden busy, it's important. It's part of a very long, slow, non-guaranteed process. But here is Joe Biden last night.
Standing there in that small town, like so many other communities across America, I couldn't help but think there are too many other schools, too many other everyday places that have become killing fields, battlefields here in America. We stood at such a place just 12 days before, across from a grocery store in Buffalo, New York, memorializing 10 fellow Americans, a spouse, a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, gone forever. At both places, we spent hours with hundreds of family members who were broken, whose lives will never be the same. They had one message for all of us. Do something. Just do something. For God's sake, do something.
Why does it feel like when he does these speeches about crises that he's talking to the president as opposed to him being the president?
I mean, there's only so much he can do unilaterally. And even to the extent that there's anything, I mean, in terms of guns.
Cool. Do things unilaterally.
Right. Do them and encourage the lawmakers to do it. But it's also important to put pressure on lawmakers.
But frankly, from a messaging perspective, then name it. Name the people that are going to be – that are holding this up. Don't just say vaguely, amorphously, do something. Call them out by name, because then we're doing – then it's like the same thing we talk about on this program all the time. Make it about the Republicans. Make it about Joe Manchin in particular.
Atrios at the Eschaton blog had a post yesterday or today basically highlighting one of the things that we've been talking about for a long time, which is you cannot say Republicans good or some Republicans good or looking for good Republicans. And also they are, as he put it, they're also looking to put you in jail for having a miscarriage.
Right.
We were able to work with them in bipartisan fashion, you know, and also they want to put you in jail for a miscarriage. And in this instance, it could be. And also, they are perfectly happy having these machines built exclusively to kill people. Or to enjoy the sense that you could kill people. That's to be fair, it's a nuanced thing. Here is Chuck Grassley at a town hall. When did this happen?
I think it was just yesterday.
Just yesterday. He's in Louisa County, Iowa. And this is what he heard from his constituents.
There was a shooting in Iowa yesterday, too, we should say.
In Des Moines, yeah, at a church.
And so this is after or before?
After, because she mentions it, yeah.
You are risking their lives and my grandson's for the gun people? Are you kidding me? We've had a shooting in Des Moines. And here's one more thing. You and Senator Ernst, hearts and prayers, whatever. Why are you not down at those funerals in Texas? You seem to think it's okay to arm the whole country with 400 million guns. More than people in our country. So why are you down there mourning with those parents? The immunity one first.
I don't know about all of you, but it's a sad commentary when we have somebody that can kill all the kids that are killed. You'd think that the safest place to go would be send your kids to school and be the safest place. We all feel very sad about all that stuff as well.
All that stuff.
And when it comes to the issue of guns, as a result of what has happened after several shootings, in this one particularly, Senator Schumer has assigned Senator Murphy, and Senator McConnell has assigned.
All right, can you just pause it for 1 second?
Have to acknowledge that the person shooting this is I think their heart is racing and they're breathing a little heavily.
Well,
but it's also juxtaposed with like Grassley, who seems like he's on the verge of like also.
We obviously should not engage in the serious science that is body language expertise without having a degree. But let me just dabble in it for a second. He walks away from her and he's like literally clutching himself. Do we have the, he's so tense right now. He literally walked, put physical distance between himself and this constituent and he's just saying gobbledygook.
I need to hold me.
Him getting told to speak up by one of his constituents is maybe one of my favorite interactions I've ever seen between a constituent and a senator.
All right.
Speak up.
Continue.
Senator Schumer has assigned Senator Murphy, and Senator McConnell has assigned Senator Cornyn of Texas to see what could be put together. Yesterday, they had a meeting by Zoom, and they had very positive results that they think they've got a framework put together, that something can be done to stop this violence through some gun legislation and through some school safety issues. And so to answer your question, I'm going to wait until they report next week before I decide what I'm going to do.
And after that, he crawled into a fetal position or curled into one and started sucking his thumb.
I mean, honestly, he's just like, maybe I'll be dead by then. So why would I take a position on this? So I may just go into eternal slumber and never bring it up. So
it's not funny, but it is.
I'll be fine. I'll be fine. Oh God, I'll be fine. I don't know what else to add to that. Frankly, I mean,
get on those Iowans.
I mean, frankly, this is the type of thing that people should be doing at every single town hall that their congressperson, that their senator has.
Like the Obamacare appeal times.
Exactly. Back to 2012, or 2010, I should say. A couple of words from our sponsors before we get to Alex Perrine. It's Friday. Program is sponsored today by our favorite sponsor, SunsetLakeCBD.com. Head over there. Use the code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off your CBD products. Now, I know I say that word funny, and we do that because of the algorithms or whatever it is.
Yeah, silly.
But look, Sunset Lake, they're a fantastic business, mostly employee-owned, to the extent that they add on people for, you know, their busy season when they're harvesting and whatnot, minimum wage of $15 or more. They are big participants in helping the community. They're also movement partners. They donate money to strike funds. They donate money. We've done multiple things with them where they've donated thousands of dollars to the Innocence Project. I think $10,000 to give directly in dealing with poverty. They've done help soup kitchens. They also have amazing farming practices. They practice regenerative farming in conjunction with the University of Vermont, and they use integrated pest management, so there's no pesticides on your flour or your tincture or any of the CBD products they have. And they have great products.
Oh my God. I have a story because I couldn't find my gummies, the CBD melatonin gummies. I'd gone to a graduation last week, and so it was like somewhere in my luggage and I couldn't find it anywhere. I finally found it last night, and I finally got a good night's sleep last night, which is like what I needed because I couldn't find them. I'm becoming.
And you needed it bad last night because of what the Celtics did to your gambling tickets.
Stop doxing my problems.
It's not doxing your problems. Everybody knew it was happening. But also on top of that, not just the melatonin gummy bears are fantastic for sleeping. They also have the sour gummy bears. They have fudge. They have coffee with CBD, which is a great weekend blend for me. They have after a meal or, you know, something like that, where I'm feeling like I want to relax, I use some of their pre-rolls. They also have flower and bud and keef that Matt uses to mix in with some of the other things he smokes. Now legal in New York.
The other legal things.
And the tincture has also been my go-to for sleeping. So I switch back and forth between the gummy and the tincture. But the problem with the gummy for me is like I love the taste of that elderberry too much.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't take too many of those.
The gummies are dangerously tasty.
20% off, left is best, code SunsetLakeCBD.com. Also, it is it's Friday. It's not Throwback Friday, but it is one of Emma's favorite ads. 2022, we have high-speed internet. We have celebrities going to space. Some of them we'd like to leave up there. Electric cars. And yet, people are still cleaning their buttocks the way our Victorian brothers and sisters did with toilet paper. Step into the 21st century and upgrade your bathroom routine. Start washing your bum with Hello Tushy Bidets. I'm not going to read that part.
Do it.
Because smearing your business around with toilet paper
is worse than 100 years ago. Also, washing the buttocks
but it is.
Part?
Okay. Well, I use the word buttocks.
Right, but that's not that the part. Right area.
Well, in between your buttocks. Look, but seriously.
Accurate, but not precise. But
seriously, during COVID, I went bidet, and I have not looked back.
Bidac.
Exactly. The Hello Tushy bidet attachment. It washes your bum with fresh water. It's a much better clean than toilet paper. Listen, when your hands are dirty, what do? Do you just grab a paper towel and wipe your hands? No, you wash it underwater. And with a Hello Tushy bidet, you simply spray and pat dry. It attaches to your existing toilet. No electrician or plumbing needed. Or plumber, I should say. It is super easy. If you can change your toilet seat, you can put this on. It installs in less than 8 minutes. It cuts down your toilet paper use by 80%. It saves money, saves paper waste, and, of course, it gives you a better clean. It has cleaned over 1 million happy bums. I want all of our listeners to have clean bums. I think everyone knows that. Visit HelloTushy.com/majority. Get 10% off plus free shipping right now. That's HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. And tag at HelloTushy on social media so they can celebrate your clean bum with you. And lastly, a great gift for Father's Day or any time. You know, when you get older, it's hard to find gifts that are fun. John Benjamin, for my 50th birthday, got me a painting of himself, semi-nude. And it was a great gift. But you can't, you're not going to be able to, I mean, you're not going to be able to get that gift for everybody. That's
right.
Most people don't want to do that. But this is a great gift. Along, there's no nudity associated with it, but it's along the same lines. Established Titles. It's a project based on the historic Scottish custom where landowners are called lords and ladies. And Established Titles allows you to ceremonially purchase as little as 1 square foot of dedicated land in Aberdeenshire, Scotland, so that you can call yourself a lord or a lady. You get an official certificate with a crest, a unique plot number, and they let you see exactly where your plot is located. I saw a picture. The best part is, for each one sold, Established Tiles plants a tree to protect the beautiful, pristine woods of Scotland. They also partner with organizations doing environmental work all over the country, like One Tree Planted and Trees for the Future. I've given gifts of that in and of themselves without the fun part. So Established Titles is fun, but it's also a great way to preserve the picturesque woodlands and biodiversity of Scotland and supporting global reforestation efforts. Is that what you call that?
I think so, yeah.
Makes a great last-minute gift on Father's Day. Now, I showed everybody the other day the Lord Sam Cedar plaque. That's right. I'm not just the Lord. I'm also a lady.
Mm.
Lady Sam Cedar.
They should have called it Samantha Cider.
Yeah, I guess that would have been good. Yeah. But Sam Cedar, by the virtue of ownership and land in Scotland, by way of a dedication upon effect and receipt of this proclamation, in particular regarding land, described as plot 272951.
Wow.
Very proud of that land. I am now a title of lady, and shall hereafter and sundry be known as Lady Sam Cedar. So if you see me out and about, I want to be addressed in that way. Established Titles is running a big Father's Day sale right now. You can get an additional 10% off when you go to establishedtitles.com/majority. Use the code majority. That's establishedtitles.com/majority. Coupon code majority saves you an extra 10%. We will put the link in the description of this video or podcast, whatever you're listening on. Check it out. Now I want to welcome to the program. Oh, and he's got to, dude, you got to move your, you got to slide over because like in the witness protection program. Yeah, just get in between. That way.
This way. Better. That's yep. better. Yep. All right. I'm moving just for you.
A little more. There. Okay. Just, now we can see your face. Okay.
All right. How am I now?
Can we lighten them up too on the OBS? Can we lighten up that frame?
I can.
You got to get the mirror. You got to get the window out of your background. That's the key because your camera is reacting as if you're. Right. Yeah. There you go. Watch this. Okay. Yeah. It lightens up. Now that's also not a bad. That's a nice. That's nice. We get to see your split duck heater and air conditioner, so that's nice. ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome back to the program. He is the co-host of the Politics of Everything, contributing editor to the New Republic, proprietor of the good version of the AP.
The real version.
The real version of the AP, Alex Perrine. Alex, great to see you.
Great to see you.
I'm here with Emma. Thanks for joining us. So you wrote a piece. There's a couple of pieces I wanted to talk to you about, and they deal with what's going on. One was The unanswered question, you write, if an entire generation thinks the system is broken, might that be a you problem?
Yeah.
There is, like, I have had more conversations, I feel like, in the past, I don't know, 6 weeks about this general sense of everything is, like this beyond malaise. Like there is a pre-apocalyptic feeling that is out there, and it's strange in some ways because, you know, you got Jamie Dimon. I don't really listen to Jamie Dimon that much, as you know, but I mean, he was like apparently saying like there's a hurricane coming, you know. I guess financially speaking, there is a broad sense of, like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with inflation. We don't know what's going to happen with a recession. There is a sense that people are pulling back on spending, particularly, low income folks, because they're running out of money. Yet we're also seeing like almost 400,000 jobs. I've had four conversations with four different people, like running from mechanics to, guys who drive trucks to haul stuff, about the lack of the lack of people for jobs, and people getting offered jobs. Guy I know hauls stone, and he's like, I can't go to a quarry without getting offered a job. It's crazy. What's going on, and what are the people who are questioning as to like why people have lost faith in our institutions? What are they doing about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. The I think right now there's this sense that the sort of the economy is weird and unpredictable. No one in power can sort of credibly say what's going on. It's funny because people have this very negative sense about it. When, as you say, employment is really strong.
That's really strong, like stronger than at any really other strong. Time that we've ever, and to the extent that, I mean, inflation is up, no doubt, but wages are also going up. And
yeah,
that's a lot harder to reverse than inflation, or I should say.
Yeah, yeah, and it actually leads to funny sort of negative sense in some ways, I think, because that piece I wrote about the unanswered question, it was partly to sort of explain youth disillusionment with the system and young people's disillusionment with the Biden administration, because their poll numbers among young people are pretty poor. But, you know, that gets to the fragility of the Democratic coalition, right? Because wages are up, the employment is looking great. It's also impossible for anyone young to buy a house, and rent is out of control, in not just in New York, but in cities across the country. I think that for a lot of older people in the Democratic coalition, on the one hand, they are thrilled that, you know, there are houses increasing in value over and over again. But they're also upset that this economy means it's like harder to find help, right? It's harder to get people at the quarry. It's harder to get people even to work at your restaurant, you know, all these other things. So I think that's what contributes to this sort of across the board feeling of we need someone to get this under control, even when ostensibly the numbers are fine, you know, or good even in terms of employment.
Yeah, it's I was going to touch on the rent thing. Do you have a sense? I know you did a podcast on that.
We just did a podcast on that. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
What did you find? I mean, is it that we just simply have a lack of housing? Because usually the dynamic is, you know, when home prices are, well, I guess maybe home prices are going up and therefore it's like putting pressure on the rental market. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really hard question to answer. But again, like we just did a podcast episode about it, the politics of everything. You can listen to it. We tried to figure this out. And you know, we were talking about, this is usually a New York story, or it's a big city story. It's a New York, San Francisco story where, you know, they haven't been building enough housing to meet demand. So rents are going up. It's happening across the country now. Dean Baker, the economist, suggested one big part of it was that, you know, what work from home has done to the sort of white collar people is it has allowed them to go to these other cities that had not previously experienced these surging rental demand. So places like Phoenix and, right, and places, right, like that, where rent had not previously gone up.
That's Dean definitely happened, even, yep, like I know upstate New York,
exactly,
mid Hudson Valley and the, you know, the Catskills in that area. I think there's a lot of people who've moved up there, you know, from the city and other places around the country who can work remotely.
And a lot of people who are priced out of Silicon Valley, priced out of the Bay Area, you know, they're going to these other cities now that they're working remotely for, you know, tech companies and other places like that. And that drives up the prices for everyone else who would have been renting there before. And we're much more, I mean, the other part of it is since the housing crisis, since the Great Recession, we're much more of a country of renters than we had been before. You know, like there had been a lot of families that would have been homeowners in the beginning of this century are now trying to rent houses across the country. You know, and as I'm sure you know, like, we also sort of stopped building all over the place. We stopped building, and now building new construction is expensive and with the supply chain difficult.
And is there like, you know, I know that in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, there was a lot of foreclosures, houses in like, in housing development areas that hedge funders came in and bought up a ton of these houses. And I mean, I just recently had somebody put my cell phone by mistake on like Zillow on their Zillow, you know, thing. And I got, you know, for selling a piece of property somewhere in New York State, I think, I don't know. And I got literally like 75 phone calls.
Oh God!
From people all around the country to buy this piece of property for whatever, I guess it was 80 grand or something. And I kept, you know, like it's there's something crazy going on. And I don't get the sense that anybody has a real sense of what that is.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I find sort of interesting is that, you know, no one I know. I know a lot of people and you know, this is in Brooklyn and in New York, but I know a lot of people who are really struggling to find somewhere to live and are worried about rent. And you don't get the sense from political leadership at the local or the national level that they're not coming out and saying we have a plan for this. They're not coming out and saying here's what's going on. But they're especially not coming out and saying here's our plan to address this.
There doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement of this whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd, and my only explanation is just, again, like, not just that they're sort of, oh, they're old and out of touch, but just that, like, the people they hear from are comfortable homeowners, right? Like, that's just who they hear from every day.
And there only seem that if there is, say, from Biden, a response to some of the economic pressures that we're seeing, it's purely inflation based. That's the only thing that they seem to be focusing on, which, you know, just buttresses your point about who they're hearing from. But also, you know, people at the Fed, they're focused more on the inflationary pressures than the day to day rent issues that people are facing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is again a contradiction that underlies the entire entire party coalition. As I said, is that like house prices go up is great news for a huge portion of the Democratic electorate. Oh, great, house prices up. That's what we've been trying to work for years and years. And you know, it's also frozen out an entire generation from home ownership. And to your point, like, you know, Joe Biden, his account tweeted about inflation yesterday, and it was like, here's my plan to address inflation. And it was like, step one, let the Fed do its job. Okay, great. That's great message. And step two was like, get everyday prices down for people. But again, you know, politicians will talk about gas prices before they talk about rent. I find that really illuminating that they will go out there and say, we will reduce the price of gas before they will go out there and say, we will help you make rent this month.
Well, that, I mean, is that a function of just like maybe there's more to do? They can do stuff nationally. I mean, we just today headlined two stories that I suspect are linked. One being that OPEC has agreed to sort of increase their supply by 50%, I think it was. I'm not sure exactly how much, but they're going to increase their production, I should say. And also Joe Biden is paying a visit to Saudi Arabia. You know, that's something that theoretically, at least, should lower gas prices. I mean, we're going to be paying for this on the back end. We're sort of like, right. It's a mortgage. We get the lower gas prices now. And in 15 years, you know, we're dealing with all sorts of, you know, new, increasingly worse problems with climate change. But is that a function of, like, what could they do nationally to help rent outside of, you know, subsidizing it or putting on a moratorium for evictions or what?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I honestly, politically, I think it's nuts to associate yourself with the price of gas and to take credit for it. I think it's nuts to take credit for it because you can beg OPEC to increase supply and you can cut or freeze the gas tax, but it's something that you have very little control over. It's an international market. Presidents don't have a lot of power over the price of gas. So I think it's, you know, politically, I see why politicians talk about it. I see why they pose outside of gas stations for press conferences, but I don't think you want to associate yourself with, I'm the reason gas is up or gas is down. With rent, you know, it would take Congress, I think. It would take Congress. But, like, yeah, I think we're just talking about subsidizing the cost of living for families, right? Like, and that's just like, I mean, in other countries, in Western Europe in particular, they have a lot of power over how much rent is, and they're on the same market in terms of gasoline. They're on the same international market as we are, but they have a lot of power over how much people pay for housing.
And we should also say we have a program in this country that subsidizes every single person who owns a home in this country.
Yep. Mm.
And that is called mortgage interest deduction. Yep. And on their tax, you can deduct the interest you pay on your mortgage. And that is that is a housing subsidy.
It is.
Just to be clear, we have a housing subsidy in this country. It exists already. We
and
have
not
multiple.
Only did, yeah,
I mean,
but
we,
right.
We do have some public housing, direct public housing. But then we also have a housing subsidy. If you know anybody who has a mortgage on a house, understand they are being subsidized by the government to own that house. When you rent, you do not get that subsidy.
No. And furthermore to that, we talked about on the podcast, we talked about with Dean, we talked about the concept of rent control, a policy that a lot of economists hate. Dean does not hate it. Dean thinks it has its uses. Rent control, the government regulation that says, you know, your rent can't increase or your landlord can only increase your rent by this amount or it has to be pegged to inflation. And it basically freezes your rent and limits how much it can be increased. So it's not tied directly to the market. Economists hate this. They think it drives up the general cost of housing for everyone else. But we have rent control for owners, and it's called the 30-year fixed rate mortgage.
Yeah.
That's a program we invented a long, long, long time ago to basically allow you to have rent control with your bank. If you have enough money for a down payment and you have good enough credit to get a loan, you get 30 years of rent control, after which you own your property. So we do that for people who can afford a down payment and who can afford a house. We don't do it for people who have to rent somewhere.
It's such a pipe dream, but, like, you know, Sweden has, off the top of my head, they have rent control, which is basically bargained collectively and centrally. And there have been issues with it as well, but there's higher points and there's lower points, but it's within that range. And I feel like at the very least, say if the here in New York, if we had a different kind of mayor, there could be something negotiated like that. But unfortunately, developers in these large cities have such a chokehold over over our politics that that's at this current moment a long ways away.
Yeah, I mean, New York has some of the strongest tenant protections in the country. It's much worse in other cities, but a lot of tenant protections. And you know, having covered this housing stuff in New York for a while, and having you know assigned stories on it when back when I was an editor, tenant protections don't mean a lot. You know, if it's on the books in the law, but you know the tenant can't afford a lawyer or doesn't know his rights, and so like you know it's like you say. We have decent regulations. Our rent control definitely could be stronger, but it does exist more here than it does in most other cities. But you know, a landlord can get away with a lot around here.
And just to reiterate on that 30-year mortgage, that is a policy decision that we make.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that 30-year mortgage don't exist in the wild. They're
We created that. Yeah, that
yes,
was
most yes. people don't. Most countries, I should say, don't have a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, the fixed rate, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, was a deliberate policy decision to encourage home ownership. That worked really, really well for a generation of middle class white people, you know, and it did its job for a particular generation of middle class white people. And but again, as I said, like. It was like single family housing rent control for boomers and some Gen Xers.
Well, maybe that's a good way to talk about student loan forgiveness, because Biden yesterday or the day before forgave like over $5 billion in debt for people who were essentially defrauded by this for-profit college conglomerate. But he still has not done something broadly or universally on student debt, which would, if he were to go bold and cancel it all, would definitely ease the burden on people, and maybe the generation would be more interested in buying homes, or would be able to, frankly. Not to get off the topic too much, but what's been your response since the Biden administration essentially floated to the Washington Post that they would do $10,000 except with these income caps based on tax data that was could be outdated, faulty, et cetera. We've heard nothing since then.
I am looking forward, in a very bleak sense, to whatever insider memoirs are published about this administration after the fact, because what I think is happening is that there is a faction of people in the White House who are saying and have been saying every day, it will be an easy win for you to cancel student debt. Like, just do it. Maybe not even all of it, but just do a big chunk of it. But then I suspect the people in the upper echelons, the people closest to the president, the people who have his ear, I'm thinking especially someone like Susan Rice, are the people who are saying it's a terrible idea. And they think it's a terrible idea for reasons they will tell you are political. Oh, people will resent you if you cancel their debt. People who had to pay their debt will resent it. Old people will resent it. You know, people who paid their way will resent it. They're framing it as political. I think it's ideological in a way that's canceling debt broadly would be a sort of admission of failure on the part of the people who sort of created our education policy.
And I would add, Joe Biden, and I don't know how many of Joe Biden's circle that he had been surrounded with for decades, you know, still remain, frankly, around him. But this is the guy who crafted the bankruptcy bill. This is a guy who came out of Delaware.
Yep.
And people need to remember that the idea of debt forgiveness, if there was one sort of like ideological like a sort of spine of Joe Biden's career. It was of the sort of immorality of debt forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, I think it was more like the credit card companies and whatnot. But that was the and they're undoubtedly those people still around him on some level. But it does feel like they're about to come out with $10,000 worth of debt relief. I mean, if they do the $150,000 thing, it's just the dumbest thing. I mean, it's just so stupid. So stupid.
Yeah. Because
it's really still, dumb. You're just going to create an entire bureaucracy to get 3% of the people associated with this debt. Maybe 3%. It's stupid. Hopefully that'll happen. But I also think that that dynamic that you're talking about, more than any other presidency since, well, there's only been a couple of Democratic presidencies, but more than any of the others, I think that dynamic is really playing out. And I think it's playing out at the highest levels on a lot of different issues, is my sense. And for the most part, they're not necessarily winning those. But we had an IMer the other day who said, you know, we don't want to pass any gun laws because that would be unfair to the people who've already been shot by guns.
Yeah,
I mean a little bit morbid, but that's the point. But let's pivot slightly to that, because one of the things that has really come out over the course of the past week since that shooting, and I guess that was, I don't know, 20 mass shootings ago now, that took place in Texas, was an increase in the skepticism of, well, particularly the police story coming out of Uvalde, but broadly speaking, there seems to be sort of an opportunity to question, like, maybe the way that the media and society looks at the police is wrong in a way that maybe the people who are talking about reallocating funds or defunding the police were correct. How durable do you think that sense will be, or will make any difference?
It's really hard to say. We don't live in a sane world. We don't live in a rational world, but in a world that was at least roughly logical, this would be a complete reordering of particularly the news media's relationship with the police. I think we have seen at basically every step of the way, that the police have been dissembling and untrustworthy, and that when faced with national scrutiny, their story fell apart and they have retreated to not cooperating with investigations and not allowing the media to try to continue to investigate. And so in that world, you know, you can say, like, this is a department again. And yeah, I'm sure you've been over this, but this is a place where everything the sort of pro-police people wanted to happened. The police department was not defunded. The schools had all of the security spending, all of the extra police spending that they could want for security. And you know, we know how that ended up. So I wish that what would happen now is that the left of center party would say it's time to rethink this, not even to get on board the defund the police campaign, but to say, the easy availability of incredibly dangerous firearms is the problem here. And we can spend an infinite amount of money on police, and spending an infinite amount of money on police has diminishing returns. It can't prevent this. Unfortunately, what I think is going to happen is that they already got their ad buys in about how much they love the police and how they were going to fund the police. And they're just going to sort of sidestep the issue. And we're just going to have a summer midterm campaign about how much Democrats love and respect the police, while sort of ignoring what I think is a very, very real national feeling that we have to do things differently.
Well, they're I mean, and the cops, from the cops' perspective, they're just waiting this out right now. I mean, there's that tracker of how many times they've lied, but they want the national news media, which is Campton, Uvalde, but probably decreasingly so, to leave town after a few weeks. And yeah, they feel like the scrutiny will be gone, and then things will be back to normal, because naturally, I mean, I don't live in Texas, but my sense from reading about this is Abbott and Republican rule there has created a very cozy environment for them. So as long as this kind of dies away, they'll be able to sidestep this. And the Biden administration is too weak and feckless to call attention to this massive cover-up that's happening right now. And I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, because we don't know what they're covering up, but they're covering up something. And I mean, at the very least, we owe it to those children and their families who were massacred to understand what happened.
Yeah, I think we're seeing just how I think we're seeing the sort of weird cul-de-sacs you go down when you get as timid and as popularist, you know, popularism pilled as this administration is. Because I think, as a parent, every parent in the country, or at least the sane ones, would have welcomed the White House saying, "We're sending the feds in to investigate this police department. We are sending the feds in immediately to figure out what the hell went on down there. Like, we're not going to let these cops try to blame someone else for what happened to those kids." I think that's an easy political winner, because this administration and its political team has become wedded to the idea that it must never come across as anti-police. Their first response was, "We'll let them handle the investigation." And I don't trust Texas authorities to investigate Texas police departments.
The DOJ investigation, right? It's not really about the nature of it, honestly. I mean, it is partly, but part of it's what's frustrating to me is the complete unwillingness by Biden to say a thing about what we all understand, which is that something really fishy is going on here. And, you know, if you had like political sense of trying to build something for the future where like something has to give with the funding that we provide for police and the way that policing is structured in this country, this would be an excellent opportunity to give the American people an insight into how cops are liars and they're often incompetent, and giving them money like this does nothing. And there's real blood on their hands here, for it seems, potentially.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah. Yeah.
It is amazing how much the good policy aligns with what would be good politics, and the Democrats seem to studiously avoid taking that route.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we just kind of keep seeing this over and over again after issue after issue. And I don't know, you know, you had a piece, "What Do Cops Do?" In the real AP.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it really does, I think, make a very good argument that maybe what we should do is focus on quality instead of quantity of cops.
Yeah.
Like maybe we could cut our police forces down by, I don't know, 50% and give 50% more training to the 50% that are there and have them have a smaller portfolio. Just as like a first step to see if maybe, you know, because the bottom line is, and then, you know, and then you could also tie in the guns issue, is that these guys were afraid at the very least. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite, and, you know, I don't really blame them. Maybe a lot of them don't deserve, you know, are not the people you want. And, you know, we had this problem at one point in the Iraq War. We had run out of people who wanted to be in the army or in the military. And they started to, I can't remember the specifics of it now, but I do remember that we did one, you know, sort of fake call, a fake interview on the old Majority Report during those years, where we interviewed a buddy of mine who was a comedian who was advocating for 80-year-olds to be allowed to re-sign up in the military because we needed more people, and Iraq is really hot, and you hear older people complain about the lack of heat, and this is all just going to tie right in, and it would save on Medicaid and Medicare.
Like, it's just like you know, spending winter in Arizona, right?
Exactly. Instead of Arizona, Iraq, but you don't have the same Medicare liabilities and so, but on some level, like, you know, it's not, there's not like an endless supply of people who should be carrying a gun and a weapon and, you know, a Kevlar vest around who are like, no, they'll be fine. I mean, you know, at one point when you started expanding these police departments, you really maybe signing people up who
they're not sending their best. Yeah, exactly. No. I mean, and this is, you know, on the politics of this, I freely admit my own politics about policing are much more radical than the average Americans. I freely admit that if I, you know, ran on my platform, people would reject a lot of what I think about policing. But, the politics of on just changing the nature of what the police do should not actually be difficult, because I think people intuitively agree, Sam, that like, certain people shouldn't be cops. A lot of people shouldn't be currently cops. They're cops for the wrong reasons. These are all things that would not be objectionable.
Controversial. I agree with you.
Yeah, they wouldn't be controversial at all to just make that point. And to say the things we're asking them to do are, you know, not always what police should be responsible for. That
exactly.
Actually should not be a controversial point.
That has always been my perspective on this. You know, putting aside, you know, what might be my personal preferences as to what the, you know, the police could do, there is without a doubt a very low hanging political argument to say we need to unburden the police. If you really need, and I understand, you know, some of this is real and some of this is sort of like imagined and projected by politicians, but it doesn't matter which one it is. If these politicians really feel like they need to be like seen with standing their, you know, brothers in blue or whatever it is, you could go out there and say like, I'm doing this for the sake of the police.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I wouldn't be telling my plumber to go, you know, rewire my fuse box. And
exactly.
I wouldn't be telling, you know, and you could make the same argument.
There's a proposal in New York right now to take some traffic regulation away from the NYPD, because the NYPD doesn't do any traffic policing. They barely do it, and give it to the Department of Transportation. That's one where you can just say, like, the police aren't interested in doing this. And first of all, like, they don't want to be writing tickets and all day. So give it to the DOT, and then let people call 311, and the DOT can be in charge of getting cars out of bus lanes. The DOT can be in charge of getting trucks out of bike lanes. Weirdly, the NYPD, which doesn't do this work and complains about it, you know, they are not really interested in having that responsibility taken away. But the DOT doesn't want it either, because, frankly, they're worried they won't get the funding for it because all the money's going to the NYPD.
Right.
Seems like a pretty easy political argument here. Just say, like, then we shift some of the money over and we shift responsibility.
All right. Well, Alex Perrine, as always, a real pleasure. Folks can check out your podcast, The Politics of Everything. They can read the real AP, finally. we'll put a link to your Substack, the AP, and of course, your work in the New Republic. Alex, always a pleasure.
Of course. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Emma.
Thanks.
All right. Now, folks, I think we have her. I got to tell you, this is, Sarah's got a nasty case of COVID.
Oh no.
And, she was there. Now she's gone. Oh, here she is. She's got a little bit of case of COVID. And we're just setting up her shot right now. And then we'll have her on. You can maybe hear that
But it is, she has agreed to come on despite her illness. And
I'm definitely high. Does Sudafed and Mucinex make you high? I feel so floaty. I shouldn't be on. This is so irresponsible of me. I literally just.
Sarah Silverman, welcome to the program. I think people are familiar with your work. Of course, now you are a, what did you say? Like a, oh, and Sarah, meet Emma Vigeland. She is,
yeah.
She's such a big fan of you.
That, hi, Sarah.
She's been almost having a meltdown all day just at the prospect that you might be on.
Why would you do that?
Yes, because. Well, you know Sam. Have you met Sam Cedar?
I have. I spend an inordinate amount of time with him on a daily basis. So, I was telling Sam that I watched Jesus's Magic like a bunch of times growing up, and I had all the episodes of the Sarah Silverman Program, and I read The Bedwetter. So,
oh,
there's
my
that.
Gosh! Oh my!
Super
goodness.
Fan. Yeah.
She's a super fan. She's really falling apart here.
All right. Well, just enough of that.
But speaking of The Bedwetter, Sarah, are you aware that there is a musical based on your memoir that is playing off Broadway? Did you know that?
Yeah, you told me because you went to see it last night.
Yes, it was great. How did this happen without you finding out?
I really wanted to be there and see Myla, but I got the COVID. Wow, I'm like delirious. I'm just holding it together. Also, why am I agreeing to be on video? Like, I
you look great. You look great. You look great. You look great. And we appreciate you coming.
I'm strong and my body works.
Yes. So tell us about the process of turning the memoir into a musical.
Really?
I don't know. Do you want
I don't know. On this show? I just feel like it's so... oh, my God. I'm...
All right, forget it. I tried to ask you one question.
I'll tell you what happened. I'll try to nutshell it.
Yeah, nutshell it.
You know, Adam Schlesinger, after the book came out, I put on...
don't worry about it. Don't worry about that.
Oh, now it's on. He came over with the book and he's like, this is a musical. And then he like looks at the chapters. This is a song, all the chapter titles. I was like, all right. And we wrote a lot of different kind of iterations of it. We started to, you know, and then when we connected with Josh Harmon, who I wrote the book with, the book of the musical, there's a lot of jargon you probably wouldn't understand.
I don't understand. Isn't it a little ghetto or something like that?
We focus just on the year she's 10. And so it's just bizarre to see it come to fruition, especially, you know, 2 years ago when COVID hit, we were going into rehearsals. And then Adam got sick and died from COVID, like, so fast, you know, just these things are so immediate, you know, like yeah. He texted, oh, my God, I think I have this thing. And I probably shouldn't do that voice for someone who's passed away.
Well, I'm sure he would appreciate it.
You know, and then he's like, oh, my God, I can't even get a test. I think I have it. I have a really high fever. You know, just like casual texting. Holy shit, you're not going to believe this. I'm in the hospital with actual COVID. Oh, my God, you know, and then just gone.
Right.
Now I have it, and it's just like no big deal. I'm doing a podcast, a show. Sorry.
Podcast, show. That's all right.
That's because you have the ivermectin, right?
Yeah. Well, I am not on ivermectin. I think you're being funny, maybe. Yeah,
I mean, I'm attempting to.
No, that's so. Maybe I didn't mean that in that rude way. But I always feel like, I mean, that whole ivermectin thing. When they do use it for on people. It's not just for horses.
Right. They just don't use it.
I don't like when the left conflates things to be convenient because that's what they do.
Right, I guess.
I don't mean that against you, Emma. I mean,
They do use it for things like fungus and whatnot. But yes, it is a actual thing. But it is not appropriate for COVID. It doesn't do anything for COVID.
Meanwhile, this Paxlovid people are taking causes three people I know that have taken it have gotten relapses from it. So
Supposedly what happens with the Paxlovid is my understanding is that it does not, the body does not develop the antibodies because it relies on the Paxlovid. But I don't know. I mean, I ended up taking it, but I took it. I was symptomatic before I even tested positive for 3 days. I had the worst of the symptoms were before I even tested positive.
And you just got in your fourth shot.
And I had just gotten my fourth shot.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know, but all right. Well, but this is let's get off the COVID beat. I thought the musical, and it was completely sold out. I imagine the whole run is almost completely sold out at this point. So you don't need the promotion, but I hope this thing goes to Broadway or whatever happens next. It was, I got to tell you, it was really funny, but it was also like super moving and sweet. And I almost felt some sympathy for you as a kid.
I'm just excited to hear you say, I almost felt. I just feel like that's so big for you.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the cues from other people and
there's
saw that they were
coming out of their eyes.
What's going on? People seem to be upset. Oh, is that what's going on here? Yes, it was. There was, I got so much cues from everybody else, that I
knew when to cry.
I knew when to like get a little weepy and also the cast is just tremendous.
Yeah, they're so good. I mean, God.
The kid who plays you, she's amazing. And everybody, you know, like I've met a lot of the people in in real life who are portrayed.
You know Beth Ann, you know Donald, you know.
I knew Grant and Nana.
Oh my God, you knew Nana.
Yeah. And they all sort of really do capture some part of those people.
I mean, Bebe Neuwirth as my Nana. My dad was like, she's just like my mom.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy.
It was really nuts. But I thought it was great. So what happens next? You're going to get great reviews on this. I don't know have they reviewed it yet?
No. As a matter of fact, last night was the first night that reviewers were coming.
There was a standing O at the end.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad because, you know, theater is so weird. Well, you know what? It's not so dissimilar to stand-up, but it's like there will be, you know, I just came off watching it every night for a million nights because we were in previews and changing things. And there would be crowds that yuck it up all throughout and then other crowds that are totally silent. And then at the end, they love it. Like,
right.
It's bizarre. I mean, that's not the case in stand-up. But, I mean, like, you know, on stand-up, you know that, like, an audience is like a mob and that they are a monolith. You know, like, they all laugh at things or they all don't laugh at things. And it's so bizarre. I don't know what the science is of it. But it's like that in this with theater. But it's so odd. Like, I guess, I don't know. I'll just go, like, how did that not get a laugh? And then... But then they like stand up at the end. But I love it so much more when they make noise and they emote, you know, because the actors are working off of that, you know.
It's tough. I wonder too. Like, I mean, have you talked to the actors after the? I mean, I had done some theater in New York when I first got down to New York. I did one or two plays, and you don't remember that?
What play? Well, I'm trying to remember.
The Grimaldi. I did a two-man play like at the Mint Theater or something for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
We had a 3 or 4 week run, and it was a fascinating experience. To
I hear it's super grueling just in terms of the schedule, like for a lot of people. But maybe that's just musicals when they do 8 shows a week.
I don't know how people
do
musicals.
Doing 8 shows a week. I mean, these little kids. And they have all the energy in the world. It's crazy. But
those
I'm just terrified. I'm scared that they're going to get COVID. I'm, you know, like you saw it with all the original cast, but there have been people out with COVID and understudies in, and it's, you know.
They had the people were pretty good about wearing masks in the audience. I have to say that was good and encouraging. Yeah. But when you see, do you talk to the actors afterwards? I mean, so you see the run, and I can understand how, like, there's one audience that, and maybe there is some science to it, where, like, if the people in rows, you know, A through C are laughers, then the entire place laughs. If the people through A through C are, you know, people who go to theater and just think that, like, we're supposed to absorb this, you know, as, you know, some people dance at you know, when they're watching music. Some people just, you know, in Boston, that was a thing in the 90s. Like, people watch music and just be like, you could have people just thrashing and they just be like this, and that would be it.
In Boston?
But, well, I'm just saying at that time, you know, that when I, but I was just using it as an example. But did you talk to the actors after a, like, when there's one, like, are they feeling a different energy when there's laughter or not? Because, like, you can still feel the energy coming off the audience in when you're doing that type of theater, when you're not necessarily, it's not the same as stand-up where it's like the, right, the metric is laughed when you're doing the stand-up.
That's what I want them to know, especially Zoe. And she's, I mean, they're all so incredible, and I just want them to feel like, even the nights when the audience isn't loud, you know, that they're totally with you, you know, and it is moves fast, you know, like the lyrics and stuff, people are listening sometimes, you know, but it's just better when they're loud, when they're, you know, into it, when they're bouncing energy off of them.
And how much has it changed over the course of previews?
You know, to me, so much, but not, probably not a lot. I mean, a lot in rehearsals, we had a workshop before rehearsals where there was a big revelation. Maybe it was during rehearsals with one of the songs that was actually up top. And then we cut it and changed it. And then we moved, actually put it at the end. It's what Miss New Hampshire sings at the end.
And then that was at the top?
That was like the first thing Schlesinger and I wrote. And it was when she finds out it's a sleepover. But it wasn't, we changed some of the lines, but even the way it was, it wasn't, their stakes weren't high enough. So then Yazbek, who came in for this part, David Yazbek, we wrote that angsty song when she finds out it's a sleepover. And she, I mean, I don't know how well you remember everything, but
from last night.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't, but you know, when she's just like, it's just, she's got the,
I don't think this is a spoiler alert. We can explain that. Like, the 10-year-old, Sarah Silverman.
She finally makes friends and she goes to this party and she's killing with her celebrity fart impressions, which I did used to do. And I don't know why my friends would be like, they would think I knew for some reason, like, how does Michael J. Fox fart? Oh, he's like this.
Well,
at 10, but it was funny.
What?
At 10, it was very funny.
I still think it's good stuff. And I'm going to use it on Saul. But
it's a great one for, yeah. I have a friend who is a camp counselor and I gave her that one.
But the character, the 10-year-old Sarah is stuck at a sleepover party, doesn't realize it's a sleepover party because it would have never agreed, but by hook or crook gets stuck there. And pees, in her sleep. And there's a lot of, she's worried about that.
Yeah, so you hear her inner monologue, and you know, and the other song was her inner monologue, but it was too, it didn't feel like it was real stress.
The stakes weren't high enough,
but it so works with Miss New Hampshire at the end, and then at the, you know, it was like. Such a revelation for us, you know, whatever. I mean,
no, but that's, from my perspective, I don't know about the other people listening to the show, but that dynamic of how you come across something that makes so much sense, you know, like where you're, you write this thing, then you start to pull out, extract themes from it and then reimpose those themes so that the piece is more consistent in a way that, and you don't realize what it is necessarily until you get to the end stage of that.
Well, I always call it like stone soup, you know, like you have an idea and you're so in love with it, you know, like this, the bedwetter, and it's, and here's the bedwetter song, and, you know, and then as you develop it, you kind of, you keep just like wedging it in to make it fit. And then eventually it's like everything is full and makes sense and you don't need it anymore. You know, stone soup.
What, how much, like, did you like make a calibration between, I want this to be this amount of funny and this amount of like, you know, cause it's dramatic. And at times it was very moving. I mean, it was, you know, there were people who were crying in it. And I don't know that people expected.
Not you, of course.
No. I could tell people were crying. But I did like the.
Yes.
Take the.
What is this water coming from my eyes? but, Al Franken said he cried twice.
Wow. That's good. I don't know that people necessarily expect to go and have that type of thing. Like on some level, like, you know, I've been to other musicals and you don't necessarily cry at those.
I mean, I feel like we're telling people that it really isn't sad. I mean,
it's not sad. It's moving. It's sweet.
But I will say my thought about that is always the same as how it is, which is with anything. It's just like, it just, the comedy has to be strong enough to earn earnest moments, you know? And I think that it, you know, in my view, that was the balance.
Well, I mean, I've never written comedy, but like, if the comedy comes enough from an earnest place, then the emotional moments are earned, right? That's kind of the balance that maybe you're trying to strike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
All right.
Lovely. Yes. What Emma
Cheers.
Said.
Cheers.
So what happens next? Like, what do you have a sense of, like, if things go well, this happens. And if things don't go well, then that will happen.
You know, I don't know this world so much. I'm constantly surprised by it. But here's what I've heard on the street. I mean, you know.
Is that street Broadway?
The hope is that it moves. I don't, you know, it's, the run is sold out. It's been extended. I think they're going to extend it again.
Oh, wait a second.
News,
yeah, the run is going to be extended again. We just broke some news.
That's true. Or are you making fun of me?
No, I'm just saying. You just said, I think it's going to be extended again. We just got a scoop.
I think it is. I don't know. And then, you know, I don't know how the reviews are going to be. They started coming last night. So, and then through the weekend. It's kind of great that I have COVID because the director, Annie Kaufman, who's incredible, you know, we both feel like, I think, I'm sure she has COVID too, but she keeps testing negative like you did. But I said, oh, I wish I could, if I didn't have COVID, I'd be at the theater trying to razzle dazzle them. She's like, I'm so glad you have COVID. You can't do that, you know.
Were you going to try and lobby them? Lobby?
Hey, hope you have a good time. Yeah, no, I don't know. I probably would still stay away. But I think that, you know, has a big effect. And then it's about, even if it does, I don't know who the powers are that be are that, you know, make it go. But apparently there's, you know, they're saying there's like a line around the block for theaters, because so many shows were moving to Broadway pre-COVID have been waiting to move.
That's interesting.
So, I don't know. And then, you know, the cast is, so much of the cast are children, you know, so it's scary because it's a terrible position. I mean, to have a show with like tween girls that are, you know, taking time bombs to blossoming, and then that they should be happy to be blossoming. And I think they're trying to, like, you know, they don't want to because they want to you know, it's awful.
Well, they all did a great job.
They're so amazing.
And I wish I could tell people to go see it. Wait a second. Josh from Tucson said, my girlfriend and I saw Come From Away last weekend.
That's another play.
Oh. Well, so if Sarah's show is sold out, go see Come From Away. Because apparently Josh from Tucson, they both cried. They both cried at that.
Oh, because they cried. Oh, yeah. That's supposed to be good, right?
I mean, they laugh.
It's heartwarming. You laugh and cry. I've seen it.
What's that? You saw it?
It's not Come From Away. It's good.
All right. Well, I mean, we shouldn't be talking
Thanks,
about
Matt.
That.
Yeah.
That's Sorry,
Sarah. I do want to see the Bad Weather, though.
And check out Mike Birbiglia's show. does he have a show? I don't even know if he has a show. I just assume like he's always got like a one-man show.
Yeah, like the new one isn't the new one anymore.
I'm joking. Another I don't even one. Know if he has a show. I just know. I just remember actually this, like from that Marin was always talking about it when like 15 years ago when we were doing Break Room Live. He would always be like, Mike Birbiglia's show's getting so popular.
What show is it?
Gets so mad.
like that, like as if they compete for the same like space. They're so different.
Oh no, Marin wasn't even. He was on Air America. This is like 17 years ago. Are you kidding? Like, Marin could like. Particularly
He's
at that time.
He's come a long way.
He has come a long, very long way. But at that time, it was amazing. He there was like. He
suffered so much.
He was competing with. Like anybody and almost any profession, like just this guy's going.
So great.
This guy's sending him up in the space shuttle. Like I mean, he's just been doing this for like whatever. It's fine. We've got to get more promotion for this show. It's people going to the moon.
There are people going to the moon instead of seeing this show.
And like I don't really know anything about Mike Birbiglia except for just like that Marin would bring him up all the time because he was one man show was doing well. That was it. But so what else are you doing? Are you doing stand up while you're here or?
I've done no stand up because I'm terrified. Well, I guess not anymore.
Of getting
I've been
COVID.
Doing no stand up because I don't want to be there and then near the cast or anything. But now I have COVID, so when I'm done. Am I like a superpower? Like I'm totally immune and won't give it to me? Like
I think for like, you know, for like 30 days, maybe I would count on. That's the way my attitude towards it. Like I feel like my superpowers are waning, but I still, you know, wear my mask and do all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I'm doing a movie and the day I tested positive was the day before I was supposed to do like this giant party scene.
Oh, geez.
Felt awful. I mean, I almost was relieved to have COVID because I felt really sick and I would have felt like I have to be there. I can't not be there. And then I'd bum people out for like being at work sick. And you know what I mean? It's just that awful.
It's a tough time. Everybody's going through this on some level, I think. You know?
I just have things. I'm the only one in the office that still hasn't gotten it. And part of me, it's just like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop is freaking me out a little bit.
That's how I had never gotten it. Sam, when you got it, you had never gotten it.
Well, before I got it?
Yeah.
No, that was my first time.
Yeah, I had never gotten it. I thought maybe maybe I'm the blood type that doesn't get
it.
Yeah.
DNC Google Pundit says, if there's stuff in that show from West High School, I am definitely going to have to see it. I had the same English classes with Sarah's sister, Laura, for 3 years. Aww. She was funny as hell, and I had a big crush on her.
Oh, my gosh. It doesn't have West High School. It has McKelvey. No. It's before that. It's when we're 10.
You know, what was funny, too, is that I never contemplated how much older Laura was than you at that time, like, you know, like when, like, right. I, like I knew you guys when you were adults and I don't, you don't.
Like on the Sarah Silverman program, Emma probably knows her as my little sister because she played my younger sister.
I did not realize that she was older than you.
Yeah. She's like, what, 4 years older than you?
Yeah.
She's four and a half years older than me.
And at that age, that's a big difference.
Right.
That's a big difference. But, in, you know, when you get to be adults, it's not. Now,
when it's 10 and 14, it's a lot. Yeah.
You have a third sister. You actually have another, two, four. But you had a third sister at that time, anyways,
yes.
Who is not in represented in the show whatsoever.
Listen, it's
well,
you know,
Jodine hadn't come into the mix at that point.
No, Jodine came when I was seven, but but there are things that are we focused on 1 year, and some things are from when I was 13, some things are when I was like six or seven, you know, and so it's shockingly like accurate in a lot of ways, but of course there's like, yeah, I only have one sister in this, and I had.
Well, how did they react to being cut out of it?
I think they're fine about it.
Are you sure?
I mean, it's just like servicing a bunch of characters. It's just like one little kid's story, you know?
I mean, I came away from it.
My stepmom isn't in it. My stepdad isn't in it.
I came away sort of feeling like I noticed like I was never referenced whatsoever.
Hmm.
And I felt a little bit
suspicious.
Like, I felt like that was a little bit of a slight.
Yeah.
I took it as a little bit of a slight. We've known each other for a long time and it didn't come up. I mean, I don't know. It's not a big deal.
I mean, I hadn't met you for 13 more years, but still, I should have been more thoughtful.
The idea that there wasn't even a sense, though, I thought that was weird.
Sam, remember when I did some sitcom or something and there was like fake pictures on the set and I looked at them and I was like looking again and they were pictures of you in my dad's backyard. Like somehow they had become like prop house pictures.
That's weird how I don't know where those would have come from, to be honest with you. I don't think it was your dad. Was it your dad's backyard?
Yes.
That's weird.
But maybe it was like from like, I don't know. All American Girl? No, the show. Maybe it was from the show.
I don't know why I would have brought in pictures of me at your dad's backyard, but it's possible that they put it on the wall somewhere in there, and then they just like take those, and all of a sudden they use it, and with no just
the craziest thing.
My sister reminded me of as we were leaving the show, she was explaining
really?
To my Julie came to the show last night, and apparently one time, like you came for Thanksgiving and sang a song that was with your guitar. I remember when you came with the guitar and sang one of the songs and the
what songs?
Well, it was like Around the Blazer song time, but there was another one or something.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the things that I was always struck by, like your capacity to not in any way be intimidated by the situation you were in terms of like the language you would use. And that comes across quite a bit in the show, but like my grandmother was like, I can't believe the way that Sarah talks. And
you know what? It's so funny. And it really is just because I grew up in a household where language was just not at all. I was never taught like at home words, you know. I think I was at a certain point at the very beginning of the show where she swears at school and the teacher gets mad at her and she says, oh, I'm sorry, I know those are at home words. That actually came late because like a couple years ago, Adam Sandler was on the show at Largo and he grew up in New Hampshire, you know, and he went on stage and he told a story his mom tells that I had never heard before in my life. And it's a story about me because his mom was my nursery school teacher and Mrs. Sandler. And she was scolding a kid, you know, like who had used a swear word. And I guess I was listening in and then I just chimed in and I go, those are at home words. It was so wild to hear a story about yourself when you were little, you
from
know,
somebody else's perspective.
Yeah.
I do remember also you and I participated in like a community talent show that your mom was putting on.
Yeah. In,
do you remember that? And maybe it was just you. I don't know if there was other acts. Maybe it was just you. You and I did a bit and then you did your stand up and you know, you had jokes about like eating, you know, was it jelly beans off of, you know, and I'm turning into my mom, eating jelly beans off of some
jelly off of my boyfriend's penis.
Yes. And I just remember like watching you deliver that joke in a huge amphitheater somewhere in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Palace Theater.
And full of like all your mom and your mom's friends. And I was just like, I remember thinking like, wow, that takes a lot of guts or just like lack of awareness.
A lack of awareness. It really was a lack of awareness. It never occurred to me. It wasn't like something I thought about and then overrode or like, you know, it never occurred to me.
That was really
That's an funny. Asset, lack of awareness. It's like also lack of self-consciousness goes hand in hand.
I mean, I guess there are people that do things just because they were never made conscious of the fact that they couldn't. You know what I mean? Like, and so like, is that bravery? It's not. It's just like ignorance or earnestness or I don't know.
Well, Sarah, I really appreciate
closing. Sorry.
In closing, somebody says Sarah was great, and I smile back. Recommended by Ridley Scott.
That is not funny.
What's that?
That is not funny. It's like a drama.
Yeah, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're not feeling well, but I wanted to tell you how much I appreciated the show. I thought it was great.
I'm so excited that you went, and I'm so glad you brought Julie and Myla. I think she Instagrammed me, so I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, she was.
This is how kids communicate now, through Instagram.
No, I understand. I'm aware of all the social media outlets.
Very hip with the children and the Instagram direct messages.
So what day are you on with your COVID right now?
I tested positive Tuesday morning. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. 4.
Wow. All right.
This is the first day that I don't feel like I feel almost like euphoric because I can breathe out of my nose.
Oh, you know what? Flonase.
Well, I can breathe out of my nose now.
Well, if you had asked me 2 days ago, you told me that, I would have told you Flonase.
Yeah, but I wanted to use Afrin, and my boyfriend insisted I do not use Afrin.
Why?
Because I get addicted to it.
Oh, all right.
And now I wrote it out, and I can breathe.
All right, well, good. There you go.
That's really how I wanted to end this on that. We need to go back to sleep. All right, I love you.
Afrin.
Sarah, I love you too.
Oh,
Sarah, thank you so much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you.
Feel better. And Matt, again, congratulations.
You as well.
Bradley, say Bradley.
Say Bradley. Thank say you. Bradley.
Bradley. Thank you, Bradley.
Likewise.
Sorry, that's the only one that doesn't have a name on it. Oh, yeah, Bradney Alsop. Yeah.
Bradney?
No, that's fine. it's close enough.
Did I say Bradney? I don't.
Brain fog.
I am
blaming on that.
Serena, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know how what to press, but bye.
All right, we'll hang up on you. Bye. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Sarah Silverman. Hopefully the show will get wider. It really was good. It really was good.
I want to see it now.
Folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will probably take your calls. Can't promise there's going to be many calls taken. So caveat caller.
Caveat holder.
Caveat holder. But if you want to IM the show, you can pick up the app at majorityapp.com and IM the show. And the best way to support this show is to become a member. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also are free of our red ads, but you also get the fun half of the program. And our program relies on our members. 92.3% of our revenue comes from members. That, of course, fluctuates between 92.3% and 92.8% on a rolling basis, amortized over the course of whatever.
Okay.
So, folks, join themajorityreport.com. Check it out. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Great coffee. You can get the MR blend. Go get it. You can buy in 5-pound bags, buy a whole bean. It's awesome coffee, and they are also movement partners. They are the longest advertiser we've had on this program. Every episode, I think, since day one, and certainly even before then on Break Room Live, Just Coffee has been there. They're a co-op and great company and great coffee. Matt. What's happening in the Matt Lekien media universe? What do you think about T-shirt? Like, because I texted Julie. I was like, we got to get the Emma Majority Report shirt.
Emma Majority Report shirt. I want to be involved in the design. That's all I care about.
Whoa! All right.
And Diva then I was demand.
Like, and then I was like, and also we should get like a Matt Lekien media universe.
Yes, and you can make
MLMU.
It can be like a universe logo. Can you go to the one shop, Bradley? I had to go to the bathroom, but I didn't want to leave the Sarah Silverman parts.
Thank you. Emma's going to go throw up. She's so nervous. Matt, what's happening?
Adrenaline. This weekend, we got a fun interview with Brett Scott, who wrote this book, Cloud Money, Cash, Cards, Crypto, and the War for Your Wallets. It's interesting kind of look at crypto, less in the sort of things we've usually been doing with like sort of poo-pooing the promises, but more in how crypto and cashlessness in general is a conspiracy, and we need to save cash. It's a conspiracy to surveil you and to enclose more people for financial interests. So Brett wrote a really interesting book about it. I like it because I was done doing crypto stuff, but this is a bit different enough.
Take on
yeah
it.
Exactly, and a really interesting take about cash.
This goes beyond. Beyond this is just a commodity that is being traded, collectible into
a speculation.
Like, there's also some nefarious things that could come out of
a
it.
A plan for banks to control us. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Like, let's say there's a recession and people are saving too much. You could start to like garnish stuff like that. Like really crazy dystopian stuff. So patreon.com/leftreckoning to get access to that this weekend.
People on the phone say they can barely hear. Just FYI, who are holding. Sun Jockey says, hey, MR crew, longtime viewer, relatively new to this whole MR membership deal. Thank you for joining. Love you guys and appreciate the show. I'm also a Twitch chatter, and I would like to request a Poggers. Folks, this is officially a Poggers to get this hype train going. We will also look into... We will look into enabling Sussy Pogo. Don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Is that not good stuff?
I have no idea.
I'm quite convinced I just said something that probably could get me banned out of like 23 countries.
We're probably off Twitch now.
Yep. See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. And let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this,
7-8?
Yes.
All right.
Yes?
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
life. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop. You can call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.